Kia ora, and welcome to Family, Whānau and Disability, a podcast brought to you by Parent to Parent New Zealand. We are here for the many Kiwi families out there caring for a disabled child or family member. We know the journey caring for a disabled or a neurodiverse child is not an easy or a straightforward one. So this podcast is a place to explore the issues that affect us, to share stories, swap tips, and even have a laugh or two. We would love for you to join us each month, so make sure you subscribe. Please also be aware that the views shared are those of the individual and may not represent the views of parent to parent.
This podcast is brought to you by Parent to Parent. Please note, any views or opinions expressed by the speakers are of the individual speakers themselves and do not necessarily represent Parent to Parent as an organisation.
Welcome to Connect, Inform, Support on Free FM 89.0. Brought to you by Parent to Parent, the not-for-profit organisation supporting families and whānau of babies, children, teens and adults with any type of disability or health impairment.
Before continuing our discussion with Julia Drury, I'll play an edited excerpt from Radio New Zealand's One in Five programme from December 2014. Katie Gossett talking to parents and health advisors from HealthClick about teaching young people with learning difficulties about sexuality and health and relationships.
For children with learning disabilities, it can be even harder to get a grip both on puberty, but also issues such as personal hygiene and appropriate boundaries within relationships.
I mean, you can't say to her, stop, because all the other teenagers are doing it and experiencing it, but it's a way of making her aware that there's a right and a wrong place. So in one of the books, it says, you know, private and public.
The book she's referring to is part of a series of health and sexuality resources developed by a Nelson-based company, HealthClick. The resources were developed by Annette Milligan, who's worked in the area of sexual health for many years.
One set of resources that we have is a series called Me, and that is to teach people with learning disabilities about hygiene and about relationships, about safety in relationships, and about those interpersonal boundaries and relationships, which are often very hard to teach.
What are some of the anecdotal examples of those difficulties that have come up in the course of you developing these resources?
The kinds of things that parents talked to me about were issues like their child not making any distinction between who was a friend and who was a stranger, and so running up and sometimes hugging somebody who was a total stranger. And that might be okay if that child is within your visual distance when they're quite young, but when that child grows into a young person, then you start to get issues which make it very difficult for social integration of that person, and it puts them at great risk of sexual assault or other violations. So teaching children how to be safe is a pretty important issue, and quite a difficult issue to teach those boundaries and relationships that most of us would just learn by osmosis, but people with learning needs really have to have that taught quite deliberately and quite specifically.
Have the families you've worked with reported more serious confusion over boundaries?
Yes. It's become a big issue for adolescents who sometimes will go away with a stranger or someone who is a relative stranger, and sometimes the parent doesn't know even where the child is. And it's a great anxiety for parents with children with special needs that their child could be victimised, and the risks of that are quite high. And most parents understand that their children are particularly vulnerable to that sort of predatory behaviour, really. So teaching their children that they've got to make a distinction between who is a friend and who is not a friend, and the things that you do with a stranger and the things that you don't do with a stranger, that's really crucial.
She was already producing a general resource called Sex Smart for use in mainstream secondary schools when she was approached by the parent of a child with autism.
So when I started to do the research and the development of the resources, I looked at what teachers and parents were using, and I found, golly, a lot of it looked like it had been produced by a public health nurse in 1955, and it was pretty dreadful line drawings in black and white.
She says she worked in the disability sector herself in 1980 and witnessed opposition to the idea of people with disabilities having intimate relationships.
It was almost repulsion, really, about the idea that somebody with any disability could be a sexual being. sexual relationships were most certainly not encouraged in 1980. And we were just beginning at the time, there were a few people at the cutting edge who were saying, you know, hang on a minute, just because you've got an intellectual disability, it doesn't mean to say that you haven't got the right to have a loving sexual relationship the same as anybody else. And I think we've come a long way in 2014. So there are many parents now who want their children to have the opportunity to have a full life, and that includes a full sexual relationship if that is what they want, but they do need good education and they do need good support in order to stay safe.
For some parents who are probably very busy and very stressed as it is it a case of thinking it's just too hard to go there?
I really think it is. These are parents who are really struggling to teach their children even the basics, and that's why we included those in those resources. You know, I can recall one parent saying, you know, look, it's enough for me to do what I've got to do. This is just opening up a whole area and I can't even find the energy to go there. I just got a sense of the enormous challenges that parents have in opening up any sort of sexual discussion. I mean, even something as simple as using a tampon.
The difference there is that whereas sexual activity is optional, your period is not.
That's right. And this particular parent said, I'm just going to teach my daughter how to use pads. I'm not going to teach her how to use tampons. And I don't know that she was going to give any great explanation as to what a period was or where it came from or anything.
What do you think about that?
I'm very loath to judge parents in their day-to-day life because the parents that I work with are doing so much good work. My own view is that everybody has got the right to have knowledge about their body and about how it works. And I think that can be reduced to quite simple terms that are quite understandable by someone who's got an intellectual disability if we use the right words and language. So I'm a bit of a fan for trying to keep it as simple as you can. And I think we can do that. But I do think parents and teachers need a lot of support to do that.
Part of that support comes from school programs, with the help of Sarah Kennedy from Waimea College's Special Education Department. Carly is learning practical information about male and female anatomy, and also messages about how to deal with any inappropriate behaviour. The Health Click resources have also proved useful, both for Carly and her mother Karen.
Did you initially feel quite daunted by...
Definitely. I suppose daunting as in not having anything out there for us to be able to access that was at appropriate age level for her and the understanding for her. Whereas these books and these other things have got good pictures, words that she understands, it's all in good print that she can read.
She says TV programs like Shortland Street can also throw up topics for discussion.
They're quite open about talking about things like gay relationships because they've seen that on Shortland Street.
Karen says she can't always be sure her daughter understands what terms mean.
She said something the other day and I said, well, what is sex? And she said, I don't know. So I suppose she hears it on TV and sees different things but still doesn't really get it.
We talk about puberty development, so we go in through in quite specific terms what's happening to a body during puberty, male and female. We talk about, as I said, wiping your bottom and having a shower. And we talk about masturbation very openly, very frankly and very respectfully. And again, it's about keeping things simple and not overcomplicating things.
And what's been the feedback about those sorts of topics?
The sort of responses that I have are the responses that really keep me going. So one of the mothers who was at a conference I was at on the Gold Coast just looked at the CD-ROM that we've got and she looked at me and said, this would be just perfect for my 12-year-old son who has Down syndrome. Well, you, madam, could take one home, you know, for $56 today. And her eyes filled up with tears. And she choked and she couldn't talk for about a minute. I always remember that woman because she was so overwhelmed with how she was going to talk to her 12-year-old son with Down syndrome about sex and sexuality. And the sense of relief that was with that woman was just the most humbling thing.
Annette Milligan says developing the resources was a learning curve for her too. She says she consulted widely amongst parents and the disability sector and made a number of changes based on feedback.
So we did a lot of work to make sure that every concept that was there was really clear.
The resources are the result of her 25 years' experience in the sexual health sector. And in that time, she says there have been changes in attitude towards people with disabilities.
I find that people are really challenged by the idea that someone with an intellectual disability would have a sexual relationship, that they might get married, that they might have a boyfriend or a girlfriend. There's a lot less resistance to that than there used to be, and I find increasingly that people are going, everybody's got the right to have a relationship. So I think it's really good that that's being challenged in the mainstream, just in general society. And I think we have come a long way, but I just can't wait to see a couple of characters on Shortland Street that have got intellectual disabilities and rock up to the clinic wanting contraception or whatever. I think that would just be absolutely fabulous.
And as awareness of the issue grows, she hopes her resource will give people with learning disabilities a few more options too.
The menu on dating is quite interesting because often people with disabilities, intellectual and physical, are brought up in a bit of a bubble, and they often miss out on what we used to call that behind the bike sheds conversations that kids engage in. And so a lot of people with intellectual disabilities don't actually know what these words mean. So I had an example recently that came from a residential care provider. They had a couple who wanted to be boyfriend and girlfriend, and they wanted to sleep together. And they wanted, and they did actually say they wanted to have sex. And when the caregiver said, you know, what do you mean by having sex? What would you do? They really just meant that they would get into bed both with their pajamas and sleep the night with their pajamas. And when the caregiver explained to them what sexual intercourse actually was, the young couple were absolutely horrified. Sort of in the way that a lot of 8, 9, 10-year-olds might be. You know, they go through that stage where they go, oh, that's so yucky. They were a little bit like that. But it taught the people in that facility that we can't necessarily use words and terms and know that the person with the intellectual disability fully understands what those words and terms are. So the section on dating, it says what you do when you're dating.
She says that's followed by a section that explains frankly what sex is, but gives some guidelines around consent.
Actually giving an accurate description of what sexual intercourse is about, so that's important for the young person, but also those issues of asking permission and what to do if somebody is doing something to you that you haven't invited. Because a lot of people with intellectual disabilities don't have a good idea of what's acceptable and non-acceptable touch. I mean, we have to teach all children what that is, don't we? Because we're taught often to comply and often to do what people tell us, but all children have to be taught what's appropriate and what's inappropriate touching.
Annette Milligan says there's a serious message behind the scenarios.
One of the reasons that drives me to keep on with this work is that the rates of sexual abuse of people who have intellectual disabilities is really high, and I find that just appalling. And we know that education can go some way to addressing that as an issue, so I think we all need to be informed and we all need to get the tools to protect the people who are most vulnerable around us.
Karen says while it can be difficult to tackle issues like sexuality, it has to happen.
It's going to come up and you have to deal with it. It's just part of growing up. But it was thinking, okay, well, we've come to this situation. How are we going? What's the best way of her understanding of how she's going to be able to deal with it herself?
And she says knowing those books are available has made the process less daunting.
I'm not as scared as what I probably was before, because I know that there's resources out there now that weren't there, you know, quite a few years ago. But I suppose in saying that too, a lot of our kids were institutionalised, so they weren't out in the community as much like they are now. But it is good to have the resources there, and I do feel happy that they're there now.
A kiss is not a contract, but it's very nice. It's very nice. Just because you've been exploring my mouth doesn't mean you get to take an expedition for the south. No, a kiss is not a contract,
but it's very nice. It's very, very nice. Just because we've been playing tonsil hockey doesn't mean you get to score the goal that's in my jockeys. Just because I'm in a two-man novelty band doesn't mean it's all about Boomtang. I can't go around loving everyone, I just wouldn't get anything done. You could take me out to dinner, that might be quite nice. You could buy me a burrito and some beans and rice, but that won't get you into Pan's Paradise. They call it a fire because it takes you up to heaven, oh, oh. A kiss is not a contract, but it's very nice. It's very, very nice. I'm only one man, baby, pretty baby. We're only two men, ladies, the babies, the pretty babies.
Thanks to Julia Drury from Family Planning for the discussion.
Parents could talk to their teachers. Mm-hmm. So if the young person is at a special needs unit at a school, they could say, you know, what are you covering in the health curriculum? When are you covering it? So that I'm prepared for those questions, because I know a lot of the units send home, you know, in the, it's usually electronic, they give little notifications of this is coming up in the class, be prepared. It's again that partnership. You're working alongside the school to provide the same consistent messages. And sometimes just by prompting them, they think, oh yes, we've been meaning to cover that and we're going to cover it in term two, term three.
And like you said, it means that if the parent knows what's coming up at school, they know what the kids are going to be talking about, so they come home and ask odd questions. You kind of expected it. You're not taken on the back foot, like kids coming home asking you stuff about sex, and you go, hang on a minute, I'm cooking tea, I don't know what to cook.
And that's another example, is that sometimes they ask at the inappropriate times.
Or
it's not convenient for you because maybe, you know, you're in the supermarket or, you know, you're in a place where it doesn't feel right to answer that question. It's okay to go, oh, you know, can I just finish paying for the groceries? And can we talk about that in the car on the way home or when Nana's gone home? But make sure you do get back and answer that question.
Although they'll make you sure you do. My kids certainly won't let me forget if I've said I'm going to do something. They'll keep asking.
And sometimes too, they do say things, inappropriate things in places that maybe it's not right. And the thing is to try and not make it a big issue, just go, we don't tend to say that, you know, here or now. Can we talk about that again? Giving yourself a place that,
That's it. I do recall my mum telling me a story from when my brother was little, and he must have only been about 5 or 6 because he was in primary school. And he was playing with his Lego at a friend's house, and he dropped his Lego down the stairs and said, F it. And my mum's friend phoned her up and said, you might want to have a word with Tom about this. And my brother was adamant that Darren Eady said it all the time, it must be all right. So she had to have that conversation. This is a word that we don't use. Even if Darren Eady does say it all the time, we don't use that word. He used it in context and appropriately, but he wasn't aware that it wasn't a word to use.
Absolutely. And that's the thing too, is probably have a bit of humour as well, you know, that it's...
Yeah, well, it's interesting because my oldest is 12 and she'll be turning 13 this year. And she's expressing more interest in learning about relationships and what have you, and romantic things, and seeing people on movies kissing is kind of sweet and romantic. Whereas the middle one, who's 10, is just disgusted by the whole concept. Just, yuck, they're kissing. And just runs away and hides whenever we talk about it. So it's interesting to see the difference between both the two people and the age difference. It's fascinating.
And that's probably the best bit of advice too, is that you don't have to sit down and do the whole talk about it. You know, do little chunks of it, break it down and have lots of little conversations, because that's going to have more benefit. Because a lot of young people say, you know, they don't want to have all that.
The talk.
Yeah, in one big go. And then you think, well, I've ticked that one off. You know, I don't have to say any more. It's actually about us having little conversations all the time. It could be taking the opportunity that when you're sitting as a family and watching a television program and you see a really good example of a healthy relationship, say, oh, you know, what did you get from that? Mm. And ask them some open-ended questions or something that's not healthy.
Mm.
Another example is, oh, that didn't make me feel good. Mm. What did you think about that? Mm. To see if they picked up on the not healthy situation.
We've had similar conversations around Disney movies, actually, where my daughters have gone, why does she need rescuing? She doesn't need to be rescued, that sort of thing. They're really noticing that now, that, hang on a minute, why is it always the prince who rescues the princess? Hang on, well, this doesn't seem right. So we've often had conversations around movies like that. It's been very helpful.
Yes, traditional fairy tales are very much about that.
Yeah.
Whereas, we're now questioning that. And
that's it. I like them to know the traditional one and the original one as a comparison almost. Say, well, this is what it used to be like. This is what people used to think.
Yep.
And some people still do think this way. It's good to have those things there as a, this about, is what it was like back in the day.
So again, conversations around equality in relationships is really, really healthy, because we don't want anyone having an unequal relationship.
Absolutely.
We don't want anyone being dominated or groomed or anything.
Exactly. The gender differences as well. My kids often see my husband cleans the bathrooms or cooks the dinner, and it's just very much normal part of life.
Yep.
But I remember when they first went to kindergarten, nearly all of them came home at some point and said, I'm not doing that, that's just for girls, or I'm not doing that, that's just for boys. And I actually, right from
that's
the start.
That's right, so roles need to be discussed. Yeah. What you like doing exactly. will be individual.
Yes.
We all have things that we like doing and things that we don't like doing.
And that's something I've always said to my kids about playing with toys. Toys are for kids to play with, and it's nothing to do with whether you're a boy or a girl, and that's okay. Yep. You know.
So we need those key communication skills, but we also need to identify, you know, what is it that we like?
Mm.
So again, parents can help with that, asking them rather than directing them into certain ways, because then, they're not sure.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's those open questions.
Mm. And supporting interests rather than gender roles, Anything else you wanted to tell the listeners out there?
Go on our website. As I say, you can get in touch with a health promoter in your area and they can communicate and show you some of the booklets, or you can just order them online or download them, print out the advice for the parents. We also have some video clips and video scribes on there, so young people can look at that for advice, because that's also a space that often young people like to do that rather than the written word.
Yep.
It works for some of us, but pictures are often a better way of learning for different people, it's meeting the different needs.
Excellent. Kids are growing up fast, and
it's scary. When my two boys grew up, it was very simple. They just grew up. There was no sort of pressure, but now there's pressure coming from everywhere, from TV, from videos, it's just, I don't know how kids can absorb all this stuff that's thrown at them.
Bombarded
these days.
With certain imagery about a certain, growing up too fast.
Mm. Yes, and it's hard for parents. You need to have that discussion that, you know, we live in real life, whereas everything that they're seeing on a TV screen or a phone or an iPad or a computer game, that is not real. That is fantasy. It's either been scripted or it's been totally made up because it's computer generated. So it's not reality. It's not possibly how we would interact with someone, especially in a caring way, because quite a lot of it can be quite violent. You know, again, we always need to be careful, because there are some wonderful, as we've just, our website is not violent, you know, and there are others out there. We're not the only one. There are other websites where you can gain great information, and there are some really good video scripts that are being created now as a instruction tool or, you know, learning for young people. But parents need some guidance to know where to find those and to show the young people those perspectives.
Yeah. And that's where parent-to-parent can help out. We can provide that sort of information and narrow down those searches to appropriate places.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's the thing is also for parents, to not be afraid to go, actually, this is really a scary time that my young person's now going through. I need some help and support and seek out a group such as parent-to-parent. And it could be that we would run a what we call open and honest, which is a program for parents to share those skills on how can I talk about this topic with my young people at a certain age. Mm-hmm. It could be that you've got a whole group of parents who have got under fives, so it's that very early basic conversations.
Oh.
Or it could be you've got a whole lot of parents who are aged 9 to 15, so they're pre-puberty or going through puberty, and maybe they're not quite in real dates yet, but they're interested in other people.
Yeah.
And how do we manage those skills? Mm. Or you might have a group of parents whose young people are 20 or older, and they are, you know, they're now are interested in having a relationship, and how do we give them those healthy skills?
Yeah. Because our, we have regional coordinators around the country who often hold coffee groups and things like that. So running one of your courses within a coffee group might be a good way of doing it.
Absolutely. And it's a comfortable environment for the parents, because they know some of those parents already. Yep. So they'll bring up those issues that they're concerned about. You know, we can look at some activities of how they could deliver that information.
Mm.
And parents are such a good tool. Yeah. You know, they're so useful for sharing with each other. It's about bringing them together.
Yes, that's it.
To do that.
Yeah, as we do that. So that's something I'll make sure the regional coordinators know about then. It's something that's worth looking into if they're getting a lot of requests, like I was saying, about puberty and Asperger's and puberty and neurodiverse children. How do you talk to a kid about that? So, you can run a course.
Yes, absolutely. And then that reinforces the messages, you know, gives them some key messages that they can reinforce at home with their young person.
Yeah.
And especially if they're at school, they can ask them, you know, to be running programs at school, ask what's happening in the health curriculum. Mm-hmm. If they're older and therefore living in community care, so in housing, they could run programs through those agencies as well. So it just depends what age the young person's at.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for coming in. We really appreciate it.
And thank you for the opportunity to talk to the listeners.
Excellent. And we'll put all the resources that you mentioned, we'll put a link to everything on our show notes, and so everyone can go and have a look at that as well. Cool.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Connect, inform, support. Join us next week on Free FM 89.0 for support and information from parent to parent. The program can be downloaded as a podcast. And, of course, you can get more information on our website, parenttoparent.org.nz.
This has been Family, Whānau and Disability from Parent to Parent. I have been your host, Johanna. We hope that you enjoyed the podcast and that you'll join us again soon.